Hi, good morning. This is Sarah Coleman coming from Beyond the Wall. I am interviewing Michael Lynch this morning. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Okay, good morning.
I'm going to ask you, could you share with us, Mike, what your charge is, how much time that you got, and how much time do you have in on this particular charge?
I was charged with first-degree rape, first-degree sex offense, first-degree assault, attempted first-degree rape, conspiracy to commit first-degree rape. I was given 3 life sentences plus 25 years, and I have 20, almost 20, close to 21 years now.
Okay, could you please give us a little background, Mike, on your case? I know that there's a two-part case. For those of you that don't know, there's two parts actually to Mike's case. There's two parts to his case. There's actually a civil part to his case, and there is also a criminal part to his case. So which one do you want to speak about first, Mike? All right, well, I guess go ahead and tell us about the criminal portion.
Okay, the criminal case. March the 20th of 1998. It was me and 3 other guys smoking.
Could you speak up a little bit, please, honey? So when you went there to the apartment that day, you went there with the intent on this happening, or I mean, how did this come about?
Started pouring down rain, so little guy said, man, it's a vacant apartment inside of my building. I said, well, he like, we can smoke in there. You know, it was carpet in there and everything. So we was like, okay, well, that's where we gonna go. And that's where we went. No, there was no intent of nothing dealing with a female, nothing dealing with them two dudes that came in there. It was not planned. It wasn't any of that. When they got there and they started knocking on the patio door, we got scared. So, you know, we ran to the back of the store and jumped out the window and tell the little kid that lives in that building, said, oh, no. I mean, no, I know him. We know him. I'm like, hold up. And when I came back out and I seen who it was, but I never smoked no marijuana with her. I never got drunk with her. No, it was not planned. The whole thing was only for us to finish smoking our little weed and drinking and chilling out in there until the rain stopped, and then we were leaving.
So how was it that the victim wound up at the apartment? So how was it that he was able to get her to the apartment? I don't understand.
I'm not even sure. Like I say, I have no clue. The only thing I know as far as that go was he met her at a bus stop with the other guy, and they took the last bus all the way out there. I don't know what was said, you know, in order for her to go with them or any of that. I don't know. Only thing I know was when they were talking, like I said, that's how we found out that she was with four other people smoking weed, drinking vodka. Five other people. I'm not sure because, like I said, I never held a conversation with her. I didn't know.
Oh, so you didn't know her prior to her coming. And I want to be careful about, you know, saying this, you know, her smoking weed and drinking vodka, because you know, it almost sound like to somebody else, like, I mean, I know you're not victim blaming. You understand what I'm saying, but I want to kind of stay away from that if we can. So once she came to the apartment, when she came in, was it like a forced? I mean, how did she come in? How was she when she first walked through the apartment door?
When they first walked in, well, I seen the two guys first. Uh-huh. And smaller than them, so, you know, they came in and everybody was speaking over there, whatever, and I was like, oh, what's up, man, oh, I know you, yeah, man, how you doing, and everybody just started introducing themselves, and we was all sitting on the floor in the living room, you know, there's no furniture or nothing in there, we were all just laying on the floor, everybody just sitting on the floor,
mm-hmm.
And that's how that transpired, and, you know, when she came in and she sat on the floor with everybody else, and they was like, oh, this is such and such, and, you know, everybody spoke, hey, what's up, how you doing, and that was that. And they was like, well, what you doing all the way out here? He was like, man, I'm chilling.
So then, I mean, what happened? How did the rape ensue?
Talking to two of the younger guys. She started talking to them, and the two guys that boarded in, they wasn't really saying anything. At first, got up and went to the bathroom, and you know, they told us that the little guy who lived in the building, he told us that the maintenance man lived next door, so we had to be quiet. And went to the bathroom and a glass broke. And when the glass broke, the bathroom door came open. When the bathroom door came open, it was like silence. Wasn't nobody really saying anything. They came out and they went straight across because the bedroom was like right across from the bathroom. So one guy started having sex with her.
So when you say started having sex with her, you mean I mean they were making love or he was forcibly having sex with her?
No, it was weird because she was just doing everything that she just took her clothes off right along with him. And them two started having sex. But he punched her, he punched her in the stomach. On the ribs, somewhere because there was no lightness in the bedroom first. So he got up and and I'm sitting there
I don't want to keep interrupting you, but if she was compliant, I don't understand why he punched her in her stomach.
I don't understand either.
Okay.
I don't understand either.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't understand why he did that either. And I told the little kid, I said, man, let's go. You ready? And he's like, yeah, hold up a minute. So, I'm like, all right. So I go back in the living room, and I try to wake the guy up that's asleep on the floor out of the living room. I try to wake him up, and he was one of the original guys that was in there with us already. So he's still laying there. So I went back, and now it's another guy that's sleeping with her, that's in between her legs. So I tell the little kid again, I'm like, man, you ready to go? Let's roll. And he's like, all right, hold up a minute. I said, well, I'm going to be out front. So I walked out front, and I never stopped. I went straight to my father's house. And when I got to my father's house, only thing I know is I remember waking up the very next morning to my pager constantly going off.
Let me stop you. Let me stop you right here. Let me ask you this right here because, okay, first you said you guys were sitting around. You understand sitting around the room, and whatnot. Uh-huh. And then they went up and they had sex. So I mean, you didn't mention just then that the other guy was like knocked out or asleep. You said, that one person went in and had sex because you was like, I admit, all ago you were like, I admit, she got raped. I should have done something. I mean, now you're saying that you walked out, you left, and she was being, because you mentioned rape. You understand what I'm saying? So first you said that they had sex. They took her clothes off. She took her clothes off willingly. The first person was having sex with her, then the second person. So what would make you say that she was being raped? Because now, I mean, that sounds like a train. I mean, what makes you you say that she's being...
It was rape when he struck her.
Okay.
It was rape when he struck her.
No, I just...
That's what made it like that, because there was no... Like I say, she wasn't fighting or struggling. She was doing everything that they were doing. But I don't, like I said, I don't understand why he hit her. I don't understand any of that. But that's when it became rape. But at that point, I knew the awful feeling. I knew that it wasn't right.
So why wouldn't you say something?
Had a lot of things going through my mind and dealing with it. For one, because I was abused. For two, I felt like at the time, mind your own business. Get out of there. And I know that that was not right. I know that it wasn't. Like I said, I was under the influence of drugs and alcohol at that time. I know that it wasn't right. And I know that I was supposed to say something. I know that. I know that. but I wasn't thinking clearly at that time.
So let me ask you something. At that point, you were only present to see two people have sex with her.
Right.
And you're sure that you were only present to see two people having sex. You didn't see the I know that we're not going to get this all done in the 30 minutes or whatever, but I want to just break right here. Go please and tell me about the Fairbridge. So you were 18 at the time that this took place. Tell me about, go back and tell me about Fairbridge. You know, what happened at Fairbridge right quick.
When I was, I think I might have been 11. Staff member who was, you know, everybody has their individual, you know, counselors that they call them group leaders that they go to, you know, they talk to about their problems and what have you. Well, this particular staff member, he sexually abused me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know that you can hear it because, you know, you're not being in it. I mean, it's you, you know, in the first person and stuff. But, you know, when I speak on you and what happened to you, I can almost hear the little boy. I can hear the victim. You understand what I'm saying? It's like you revert back to your childhood. You become that little boy. But then when I spoke about, you know, the victim, you know, in the rape case and stuff, and I don't want to, because this is your interview, this is your opportunity, you understand what I'm saying, to tell your story and whatnot, but I don't want to say it's like matter-of-factly or anything like that, but it's almost like, you know what I'm saying, you were initially saying like she was compliant, is how I feel like, you know, you were saying. And I think the problem that I have in all of this, and I do understand, I know your story, you know, I'm going through, because they don't know your story. You understand, you know, we've got to be careful. You understand in victim blaming, because you were a victim yourself. And that's the problem. So I'm giving you an opportunity. I'm not trying to be hard or anything. You know, I can't even say I'm on your side. I'm on the side of the truth. And that's what I'm trying to get at, because you have a whole lot riding on this. You understand what I'm saying? I don't want you to think about what I want to hear. You know, one thing about the truth needs no support. You understand? If you made a horrible decision, you made a horrible decision. But I'm giving you an opportunity to tell your truth. I'm not going to, you know, stop this and, you know, start it over or anything like that. You understand? I operate in the truth, and I want you to operate in the truth. And I'm giving you an opportunity to tell your truth. I don't think you got to testify at your trial or anything like that. So I want to go back in, and I want to know the truth. And the reason, guys, that I went back and I had, because I'm going to bring you guys up to speed, and we're not going to be able to get through this in this interview. I'm going to bring you all up to speed. Mike was born to, his mother was a drug addict. He was actually a product of, I believe, a one-night stand, right, Mike? Yeah, he was a product of one-night stand, and his father came in, you know, to get him. His father, you know, didn't really keep him. He carted Mike off from, you know, his grandmother's place, and then he kept putting him in different mental institutions and stuff like that. Mike was, you know, he suffered horribly, you know, at the hands of an adult, him and five other kids. At the hands of an adult, Martin Cooker was his name. You know, I'm not protecting him. He was a counselor or whatever there, in charge of the boys and stuff. Michael's father ended up suing the place. Michael has no idea, you know, the monetary, you know, amount that his father received. He was left in the treatment facility after he was raped and stuff. The father basically took off with Mike's money. The lawyer took off with Mike's money. You understand what I'm saying? This all happened, you know, before the age of 18. He was charged with this rape at 18. And we're not going to be able to get through it, you know, in this interview and stuff. But, you know, I want you guys to, but, you know, because this is really, you know, it's what's happened to Mike, you know, is horrible. I mean, it really, really, really is. What's happened to the victim? It's horrible. You know, they have that in common, but you know, it goes deeper than that. So Mike, let's pick up, let's go back, to the room. I mean, let's go back to the, apartment that day. So was there anything that you left out? You know, you said that she came in, so you weren't present, you know, with the bathroom or anything, her being hit in the bathroom. I believe that the phone went off. Sorry about that. But we will pick up on this interview again. Thank you. Hi. I need you two to speak up too when I talk to you. This is Sarah Coleman, and I'm actually sitting here interviewing my granddaughter and grandson. It's 11-year-old. Go ahead.
My name is Davila Rodriguez Herrera.
Now you got to speak up, baby.
My name is Davila Rodriguez Herrera.
And then this is my 14-year-old granddaughter.
My name is Tanya Rodriguez.
Okay. And we were just sitting here listening to Michael Lynch's part one of his interview. I actually got to put this out here too because I interviewed him a couple of times and stuff. So I'm speaking to my grandchildren. As you all know, my son, their father was murdered. And I'm trying to get the kids to see why I advocate and whatnot. But I also want to take into consideration the kids, you know, how they feel about the people that I advocate. So I'm actually going to go through periodically and I'm going to let them hear the interview because that's why I gave this platform. For people to be able to tell their stories and stuff. But, you know, I want to keep in mind, I want to be mindful and respectful of the other side. You know, people that have been victimized as well. So, Tati and Debbie, you just heard Michael's interview. Debbie, what did you think about it? Speak clearly.
I thought that Michael was sometimes telling the truth and afraid of not... Well, afraid that if he would have told the truth, his friends would have probably have gotten mad at him, or...
So when you say tell the truth, you're talking about back when he was 18. This was 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So back when the rape took place, you think that he was afraid to tell that about the rape taking place?
Mm-hmm.
No, don't say mm-hmm. Say
yes.
And what makes you think he was afraid? Speak.
Because when he was telling about the story, he kept on stopping. And I felt like that he had to think of what to say when he was kept on stopping. Because during when he was telling what happened, it took him about 5 seconds to tell another part of it.
So you felt like he was thinking about what to say, so you didn't think he was being honest?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, okay.
Yes.
Tanya, how did you feel about what he said?
I feel the same way as Davia felt. Because at some parts, it sounded like he was telling the truth, but then in other parts, he started stuttering, like he was nervous or something.
Okay. So how did it feel to hear what happened to the girl? You being so you're what, 13 or 14?
14.
You're 14, so she was a year older than you. Let me give you the scenario. Two boys saw her down where you guys live at, down in Wheaton, at a bus stop. It was like 12 o'clock midnight. I don't know what she was doing out there. The parent in me, you know, feels like she should have been home. But she was out at the bus stop. And so these boys asked her if she wanted to come and chill. And so she left. They promised to get her home later on. So Michael and three other guys was at a place in Silver Spring, too, in an abandoned apartment building. And they were sitting around drinking and getting high. So one group didn't know about the other group coming. And they just happened to be there all together. Once they got there, that's when one of the guys, and actually I won't say his name, but one of the guys was really, really violent. One of the ones that, because I think he's since been charged with a murder. After this case happened, they were trying to get his DNA. He ended up throwing a clipboard or something at the officer and broke the officer's nose. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah, he's very violent. So she is actually lucky that she escaped with her life. But I'm asking you, Tanya, a 14-year-old girl, hearing a man, you know, reference sex. He had sex with her. When in fact they were forcing her and was having rape. How does that make you feel?
Makes me feel bad for her, and
how does it make you feel hearing how he described it?
Kind of mad because he wasn't using the word rape.
Right.
He was
So you kind of felt like he was downplaying it.
Yes.
Absolutely. How about you, Debbie? Did you pick up on that?
I felt like he was just trying to defend the other people so that they wouldn't get in trouble.
So you felt like he was coming in defense of his friends?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they actually ended up getting in trouble. They all got life sentences plus 25 years. But some of them, because they were juveniles, there's a new law that, you know, they'll be coming out of prison probably within the next year or so. Michael is my client, so I'm actually fighting for him. You know, to come home right now. So how does that make you feel, Debbie, you being a young man, and they're a couple of years older than you, and this is your sister, think a year older, or it could have been your sister. How does that make you feel about what was done to this girl?
That you know now that not everyone in the world is you could trust.
Absolutely. So if you were in this situation, what do you think you would have done differently?
If I was one of them?
Yes. If you were in an apartment and then your friends brought a girl over and they started assaulting her and you saw them raping her, what would you do?
Try and call the cops.
You call the cops. Tanya, so what does this teach you about people at the, you know, talking to strangers and going off with strangers? What's the lesson here?
The lesson here is that Well, you shouldn't be talking to strangers, and you shouldn't be out late at night. Or if anyone comes up to you that you do not know, you shouldn't like speak to them.
Mm-hmm.
Even if yeah, just that.
What about you, Debbie? What's the lesson here?
Not to talk to anybody you don't know.
Absolutely. And what about teenage drinking and mm-hmm. drugging? How do y'all feel about that?
I think that they should have known what they were doing and why, because drinking and doing things you're not supposed to do, you already know that it's something you can't do and you're too young for it.
But do you see how it can cloud your judgment?
Mm-hmm.
Because you see how Mike keeps referencing he was drunk, he was high, he was drunk, he was high. Do you guys think that that's valid, or you think that's an excuse?
That's an excuse.
And what makes you guys feel like it was an excuse in his case?
Because he kept repeating it when he was, when he was explaining what was happening, he kept saying that he was drunk and high and saying that, like, that was giving him a reason not to do something.
What about you, Debbie? When he kept referencing he was drunk and he was high, what do you think of it?
I thought, I gotta see how I can put this. I thought that maybe he was probably too drunk to do something about it. Well, it's kind of like the same thing that Tanya said.
So you felt like it was an excuse?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now, you guys knowing what happened to your dad, and this is somebody that society, not necessarily somebody I deem bad, but society deems bad, how does that make you guys feel that Grandma is actually defending someone like this? Be honest. Do you think, so he's been in there for 20 years for not telling, you know, not coming to her aid. Do you feel like 20 years is enough? You think he should be given a second chance?
Yeah, he should get a second.
I can't hear you. You got to speak loud.
I think that he should get a second chance.
You do? And why?
Because some parts that he was telling, some it sounded like it was real, mm-hmm. but then just about 25% of it, I think, was a lie.
25 you think was a lie? Tati, how do you feel about it? Do you think that he should serve more time, or you think 20 years is enough? And it's your own opinion.
I think 20 years is enough because he wasn't the one doing the damage.
Wow. Go ahead, finish talking.
And also, that's it.
No, that's your voice. I'm giving you guys a voice. Nobody can see you. You guys are right here with Grandma, and I can protect you guys. And you're it's valued. You know, you guys are a large part. You understand you guys have something to do with what I do. And I always want you guys to know that there's always a method to Grandma's madness. You understand what I'm saying? I chose to get in and to help people. You understand what I'm saying? Because I don't want people to come out here and continue to wreak havoc in our communities. And I don't want any more children to have to grow up and not have their fathers. You understand? I don't want any more children to have to go through rapes and stuff like that. So I try to get in and talk to these guys, minister to these guys, and turn their lives around. That's why I do what I do, even after your dad is gone. So do you guys, are you guys in support of me helping this one?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
All right. So I love you guys, and I thank you for your time and your opinion, and let's go tear this pool up and get some food.
Bye-bye.
All right. Say goodbye, guys.
Bye, guys.
All right. So that is the conclusion to my interview with Tanya and Debbie. We will be coming back because I want to interview them with each one that comes on and stuff. So I hope that you all will tune in. Thanks, and God bless.
Bye-bye. 11 minutes.